we're seeing a lot of installations where you move the parked cars. You'll have a travel lane, a bike lane, and then parked cars, and you flip cars and the bike lanes. So rather than the bicyclist protecting the parked cars are protecting the bicyclists.
That's a clever way to put it, huh? That's my guest today. That's Martha Raskowski with the Green Lane Project. And followers of the site will remember Ed France, the executive director of the Santa Barbara Bike Coalition. When he was on the show recently, he mentioned Martha. Well, I liked what I heard, so I tracked her down, and here she is on CDM Cyclist today. And I'm your host. I'm Frank Peters, and this is show number 54. I'm excited to start building a base of interviews here. I've got bicycle advocates and planning people, urban planning people, and others on the site for your edification. That's what CDM Cyclist is all about. Well, here in Newport Beach, California, of course, there's a lot of effort going into a bicycle master plan. I'd sure like some of Martha's Green Lane ideas to be integrated into that plan. Let's listen.
I'm Martha Raskowski. I am the director of the Green Lane Project, which is an effort of People for Bikes.
Great. Terrific. Martha, it was Ed France who first mentioned your name to me. How do you know Ed?
I met Ed when I recently made a trip to Santa Barbara to check out what they were doing in Santa Barbara in terms of making the community work better for bicycling. Mm-hmm. Ed and the Santa Barbara Bicycle Coalition invited me to give a presentation.
Had you been to Santa Barbara before? You visited before?
You know, I went to Santa Barbara many years ago for the Pro Walk Pro Bike Conference. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was held there sometime, I don't know, late 90s maybe?
Oh, some while ago, yeah.
Some while ago. So we, the Thunderhead Alliance, which is now the Alliance for Biking and Walking, did a retreat outside of Santa Barbara. And then we went into Santa Barbara for the Pro Walk Pro Bike Conference. Mm-hmm. But it had been quite a while since I'd been to Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara, a beautiful place for bicycling, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful place. Lots of potential.
Lots of potential. Yeah. Now, yep. Where in the world are you calling in today from, Martha?
I am based in Boulder, Colorado.
So that's like bicycle nirvana, isn't it?
It is a really good place to ride a bike. Although I will say, recently my work has taken me to the Netherlands and Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
And those are great places to ride a bike.
Yeah.
So I would say even places like Boulder, which are among the country's best, are only good, not yet great.
Right. But anybody in the United States, if you haven't been to Amsterdam or Denmark, you'd flip over Boulder. Huh? Lots of off-road trails.
Yeah, Boulder's backbone is our multi-use pathway system.
Yeah.
Which follows our greenways, our Boulder Creek, which is our major waterway through the city, and then the tributaries. And so over the years, we have developed a great system of multi-use pathways along that waterway system. So Boulder has 79 underpasses on the multi-use pathway system. So it's, you know, that's completely grade separated. So you can basically go all over the city completely separated from car traffic.
Don't you have any vehicular cyclists in Boulder who would object to that, Martha?
You know,
I'm kidding.
Well, it's a good question.
Yeah.
There are certainly people who are dismissive of the pathway system. And I will say the pathway system does not work really well for bicyclists who want to go really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And who want to behave like vehicles. When you use our pathway system, I ride it all the time. It's fabulous, but you are sharing it with pedestrians, and it does require that you go more slowly
Like pedestrians with dogs on leashes, things like that.
Yep. And, you know, but out of Boulder's 60 miles of multi-use pathway, there's maybe 5 miles that are really congested and where, you know, that's really an issue, especially on a beautiful Saturday morning. You know, generally, if I'm biking for, if I'm biking with a destination and I need to get there, I'll avoid those congested miles during the congested periods. But early in the morning when I'm coming to work, no problem.
Well, those congested miles, that's all a testament, I guess, to just how well used the pathways are, huh?
Yes.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. Well, I'm a little bit jealous, Martha. You got to help me work through this because in my community, we have the beach boardwalk that from my house that goes about 14 miles along the beach off road, which is fabulous, quiet, protected, all of that. But of course, we need a lot more. And I guess that's a segue into the Green Lane Project. This is your running the Green Lane Project, Martha. Let's get into that. How do you describe that?
Okay. Green Lane Project is an effort to get better bike lanes on the ground in the United States. So our focus is on protected bike lanes, which is a bike lane on the street that's separated from the car traffic by some kind of physical barrier. So it could be as simple as plastic posts. It could be curbs, planters, bollards, parked cars. We're seeing a lot of installations where you move the parked cars. You'll have a travel lane, a bike lane, and then parked cars, and you flip cars and the bike lane. So rather than the bicyclist protecting the parked cars are protecting the bicyclists.
I like the way you put that, Martha. Now, let me give you a little context because I'm sure you'll have an opportunity to give me some advice here. In Southern California, I'm in Newport Beach, and we are just commencing a process, you know, a bicycle master plan.
Yes.
And we're working with Alta Planning. To immediately to our north, Huntington Beach, just wrapping up their bicycle master plan, about a year ahead of us, working with a firm in San Diego, KTUA. And then Laguna Beach just last week, immediately to the south, initiating a complete streets plan process. So there's a lot going on here. But it seems like, do you observe this too? Is it just me imagining? So many cities seem to like follow the same path. They're going to paint stripes on the ground and they just don't seem ready to like leapfrog towards like a separated bike lane.
Right.
That's a frustration for me. You observe that too?
Yes, I definitely observe that. And one of the challenges is if you go to the standard manuals on how to design bike infrastructure in the United States, they will tell you that a stripe of paint to create a bike lane is the tool for a busy street.
Well, there you go. That's the problem, isn't it?
Yep, no matter how big and busy that street is, you know, it can be one lane in either direction and fairly quiet, stripe a bike lane. That bike lane's going to work fine, you know, if it's wide enough. If it's a four-lane highway, you know, two lanes of traffic going really fast, you know, 20,000 cars a day, 45 miles an hour, stripe a bike lane, nobody's going to ride it. Or actually 1% of people will ride it.
And that's what we have, isn't it?
Exactly.
We're the 1%.
We have built a system that works for 1% of the population.
I like that. I'm going to repeat these. There are going to be many things I suspect you'll say today I'll be repeating, Martha. That's a good one. I like that because that's the shame of it, isn't it? There's great interest in bicycling today, yet our results are quite modest. We have a lot of work to do anyway, and everybody knows that.
Well, and when you think about it, most of our system actually works pretty well. Mm-hmm. So you have separated pathways, like your beachfront pathway, boardwalk. Thank you. We have a lot in every city. You have a lot of quiet residential streets where people feel really comfortable riding. You can ride with your kids, you know, around your neighborhood. There's a lot of those streets. Our biggest challenge is those are little isolated pockets, and then you hit big streets
that
are really scary to get across or to ride along. And so our system is really disconnected. Mm-hmm. So that's been our focus on the protected bike lanes, because they really are the tool for bigger, busier streets. I mean, you can also use them on quieter streets, and they're great, but the whole system has to work as a network if you're really going to get people on bikes.
I like that too, Martha. That's great, like, framing comment there is.
You got to build a network, right?
Instead of, you know, a lot of people have one place they can go bike ride. Mm-hmm. You can go ride to the boardwalk. If you can get to the boardwalk, you can have a great ride along the boardwalk, and then you have to get back home. But, you know, my new test is what I call the frozen yogurt test. Can you and your kids or neighborhood kids, can you guys get on bikes and ride to frozen yogurt? Can you get to a shopping area somewhere and get frozen yogurt and ride back home and feel safe and comfortable the whole way?
You know, Martha, I got to interrupt. You know who loves frozen yogurt the most in my household?
Who?
My dog. He loves French vanilla.
Okay.
And people stop and stare when we let him have his own cone. So that is a good test.
I have 8-year-old twins, and frozen yogurt is a huge motivator. So, you know, we can ride to frozen yogurt, and I think it would be great if every kid in America could ride a bike to frozen yogurt.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of sponsorship opportunities now, Martha, too. Green Lane, sponsored by your frozen yogurt vendor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a great rule of thumb. Yeah. So back in my neighborhood here, I have about, 3 routes that I can take and stay off-road. We've got the Santa Ana River Trail. I can go for tens of miles up and down that. But there's no frozen yogurt shops out there, to say the least. It's a little boring, some would say. It's a great, like, bicycle freeway. If you lived inland, you get to the beach that way. It's very nice. So anyway,
right?
Everybody understands that. Let me paint a picture here in Newport Beach anyway, much like Irvine right next door, you know, is designed completely around the automobile. We have beautiful cul-de-sac neighborhoods that are little islands, and they're connected by high-speed arterials.
Yep.
Some of them moving cars, you know, at 55 miles an hour and higher. And so there are some neighborhoods in the city you cannot access except by these high-speed arterials. And, of course, you know, moms and kids take one look at that, and you know how they decide whether they're going to, you know, get out there and be on their bike.
Right. Doesn't pass the frozen yogurt test.
No, it doesn't. Or any kind of minimalist sanity check either. So we've got work to do. So how does the Green Lane Project get things moving in the right direction, Martha?
So our concept was to take this innovation of protected bike lanes, which they've been using in Europe for 50 years, and help advance it in the United States. And in order to do that, we needed good models on the ground. We needed projects that people could look at, experience, research, talk about, take pictures of. And so we did a competitive process to select 6 cities that we were going to work with in 2012 and 2013 to help them get protected bike lanes on the ground. So we looked for political support. We looked for transportation staff that was really on board. We looked for community support and projects in the pipeline. The cities had to already be talking about these. So we selected 6 cities.
So that they already had to have been, you know, talking about it. That meant that they were beyond the, like, discussion stage, of course, and where they're wrestling with resistance to change, of course, right?
Well, transportation projects take a long time mm-hmm. to get on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they did need to be at least beyond the talking about it stage, although, you know, we work with Memphis, which was very much just in the talking about it stage, but they had the other the other pieces in place, which was a really strongly supportive mayor and good transportation staff and good community support. And we wanted geographical diversity, and we wanted at least one city, one Memphis in our portfolio, that a perceived outlier or a city that others could look at it and say, well, if Memphis could do it, we mm-hmm. can do it too. Because mm-hmm. places like Portland and Boulder tend to get dismissed as like, oh, that's Boulder. Oh, that's Portland. Oh,
New
that's
York
Davis.
City as well, right, Martha? Yeah.
Well, you know, New York City was nowhere in 2008. I mean, they were not on anybody's radar screen right. as a progressive city in terms of bicycling. They got a mayor, Mayor Bloomberg, with a really visionary director of transportation, Jeanette Sadik-Khan. They brought in Jan Gehl from the Netherlands, from Denmark, to do some planning. They came up with a vision and they went to work. They started putting protected bike lanes, pedestrian plazas on the ground. They really changed the thinking about streets. As streets are placed for cars, or are streets public spaces? And they shifted to a mindset of, well, streets are public spaces for moving people in all sorts of modes. And so now people look at New York City and say, oh, well, that's New York City, and sort of dismiss them. But 2007, they really had done very little for bikes mm-hmm. on the ground. So, mm-hmm. you know, now I expect Chicago has been doing a lot in the last few years under Rahm Emanuel.
Boy, that's exciting to see, isn't it? Yep. Almost overnight, it seems like he's turned the city upside down.
Yep. And so now Chicago is going to get dismissed.
That's getting to be a longer list of cities to dismiss, isn't it?
Exactly. And I mean, that's our strategy, is that if you get enough cities on board, then it's not just the Portlands and the Boulders. It's Portland, Boulder, Chicago, New York City, Memphis. And it becomes much harder for people to say, oh, well, that couldn't happen here.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds very smart, Martha. That's great. And so what are some of the, you know, like best practices that you observe as you do these projects?
Well, so I think one of the great places to start is in the planning process, and challenging this notion that a bike lane, a conventional bike lane is all you need on a busy street. And so if that conversation can be had during the planning process, that really helps to get the right lines on the map. Mm-hmm. When I was in Santa Barbara, they're talking about there's some real community support for doing some road diets, like taking a lane of traffic and turning it into a better, you know, creating a really good bike lane, and maybe some sidewalk cafes, you know, better pedestrian space. And people asked me, well, isn't a conventional bike lane, white stripe of paint, isn't that enough? And my response was, well, who are you building this for? If you just want to attract the 1%, then yes, it's enough. But if you want families, you know, moms and kids, older people, those of us who are less brave, if you want us to be on bikes, on your streets, then no, a simple painted conventional bike lane is not enough. Mm-hmm. So if that conversation can be had during the planning process, that is really powerful, because then people are going into it with a bigger toolbox, more tools in your toolbox, more things that you can think about what you want on the ground.
Mm-hmm. I like that. So what you're doing is you're kind of like matching a certain treatment on the road to what kind of a group that's going to attract, the 1% treatments. I can see that category. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a school, you know, a neighborhood serving school, and there's a desire that not as many parents have to drive their kids to school, a simple painted bike lane is not going to change that dynamic.
Right.
Austin did a protected bike lane on Blue Bonnet, which is a street that serves a school. It's a simple installation with just plastic posts, a two-way protected bike lane on one side of the street. They did it during a resurfacing project where they go in and put a new layer of asphalt down. Mm-hmm. So then they have to go in and restripe the street anyway. So they just changed the striping around, put in the plastic posts, so it was really cheap. And now kids are riding to school. Mm-hmm. And what they've seen is that now there's a big busy intersection up the road, and the city staff told me that now they are getting parents calling them saying, when are you going to fix this intersection so that my kid can get across the street more safely on his bike? And they never had those calls before they put in the protected bike lane. Now the parents across the street are looking at that protected bike lane and saying, look, my kid needs to get from over here so they can ride that protected bike lane. So it's actually, you know, it's building more demand to make those connections.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like the sounds of that. It's starting to snowball. It's the, yep, the tipping point, right?
Yes.
Once you get started with this stuff.
You know, yeah. I'm actually really optimistic. I've been doing bike advocacy, working in the bike world in one form or another for more than 20 years. And there is a level of momentum that is unprecedented in my, you know, in my experience. And what I'm really seeing is that cities are seriously looking at how to make biking work better, yes, in their communities. It used to be biking was seen as sort of this fringe and, oh, we'll do a little bit for those bicyclists. Now cities are looking at bicycling as a mobility tool because we don't have the money or the space in our cities to accommodate more cars.
Right. Here in Orange County, they're adding a new lane on each side of the San Diego Freeway. And they're squeezing these lanes in. They're just not going to be able to do that, you know, a decade or two from now, unless,
right,
they double deck the whole damn thing.
Yeah. And I think we are reaching the end of political will to do that. We are reaching the end of money to do that. I mean, how much does that thing cost? That's, wow, billions of dollars, right?
I hate to think of it because just one on-ramp to that freeway would pay for all of the bicycle infrastructure you or I could probably dream of in this,
yep,
neighborhood. Yeah.
Yep. And if you look at demographics, young people are driving less. They are buying fewer cars. They are delaying getting their driver's licenses. They want to live in walkable, bikeable urban environments where they don't have to have a car. You know, young people have less money. They're drowning in student debt. The idea of spending thousands and thousands of dollars to buy a car is less and less appealing, especially when you have things like car share, where you don't have to own a car. You, mm-hmm, can just have a car available to you. So there is a big demographic change coming forward in terms of, you know, these reductions in young people driving. That, I don't think that's going to change. And so you add all of it up, and what we're seeing is that cities are really rethinking, they're taking biking much more seriously as a way to move people around in their cities for short trips, so you can free up parking and roads for freight and for people who really need to drive. And they're looking at it as an economic development tool.
Oh,
Rahm Emanuel in Chicago said, At the ribbon cutting on the Dearborn protected bike lane, which, you know, they put in a protected bike lane through the heart of downtown Chicago. You know, that's a big deal. And he said, you cannot be pro high tech and not be pro bike. So he wants to attract high tech companies, Google, you know, the whole host of startup high tech companies. He wants to attract them to downtown Chicago. And those companies are moving in there not because rent is cheap or parking is plentiful. They're moving there because they want to attract the smartest young people. Not just smart people. They need like the brilliant programmers who are going to figure out the next, you know, the next Amazon or the next Twitter. And those young people want to live in vibrant, walkable, bikeable places. So it's, you know, it is becoming a new economic development incentive to make your city really great for walking and biking as a way to attract those companies, you know, in addition to the more traditional way of tax dollars out of the city pocket going to the corporation to say, you know, won't you move here?
Right. But seldom ever get the yield that people anticipate, right?
Yep.
Now, lots of cities have, neighborhoods, let's put it positive, that they'd like to see stronger economic, statistics coming out of, right? Even here in Newport Beach, we've got pockets in the city, lovely neighborhoods that go through economic decline from time to time. And it seems like, you know, transportation options just don't get the attention. It's a grandiose projects with land developers that that never seem to go beyond, well, what are people going to do when they drive here? So that's a local challenge we have.
Yeah, although, you know, we also see it in the real estate world in terms of new developments and where the real estate industry is thinking they can make the most money.
Mm-hmm.
And more it is in creating pockets of walkability and bikeability, whether it's in, you know, big sprawling suburban areas, it's, you know, how can you come in and create pockets of higher density, sort of town centers within your big sprawling suburban tracts of land?
Yes, sure.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think one of the things that that the developers are learning is that one of the last waves of development was shopping centers that looked walkable. You know, it was like ye olde town center. But then,
pardon
when you
me laughing there, but you just hit a nerve. I can picture exactly what you're saying. Sure, yeah.
Yeah,
a giant mall within walking distance of my house, and the only challenge is you have to walk across this ocean of parked cars to get there.
Right. So you know, they went from the indoor, you know, completely suburban shopping malls to ye olde town center, you know, lifestyle malls, where if you look at it in a picture, it looks lovely. You know, it's like, oh, great place to walk, you know, all these neat little stores and shops. But then you look at it from an aerial vision, and it's completely surrounded by an ocean of parking.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, those are not working very well. I mean, luckily for us, those aren't working well. The ones that are working are where they actually connect them to the neighborhood so that you think, oh, I can walk with my neighborhood kids, with my dog. Let's take a nice stroll for frozen yogurt in the new shopping mall because I can get there. That they're actually embedded in the neighborhoods, they're linked to the neighborhoods, you know, they get that vitality of people actually walking there and coming there on bikes.
Mm-hmm.
You're painting a nice
picture, Martha.
Okay.
Very nice. Here, they just opened a new Whole Foods marketplace, right? The entire neighborhood is thrilled to see this development come along. But when, you know, as they say, the rubber hits the road, when you exit this beautiful new grocery store, you're immediately confronted with, you know, crossing the street within the, you know, the parking structure. You're like a deer in the headlights out there, or cannon fodder for the automobiles that are racing around to find a parking place. And it seems like they missed the boat in terms of, connecting a nice people space with this new, you know, very exciting development.
Yes. And, you know, I think that's one place where people, you know, neighbors and others can really get engaged, because most of those developments go through a public process. And that is something that folks in the community can demand, is that make sure it is well connected to our neighborhoods, that we have really safe ways to get there by bike, to get there by foot, not just that it looks good. Mm-hmm. And then you put a bike in front of it and take a picture and say, isn't this wonderful?
I know it. Bikes are appearing in a lot of print media, aren't they? Or media in general. They're little icons.
Yep. Yeah, it's the new way to sell all sorts of stuff.
Right. Martha, let's change gears for a second. You mentioned earlier you've been involved in this whole subject for 20 years. I'd like to know more. How did you get started in bicycle advocacy?
I have a background in journalism. I have a degree in journalism. I did video production for a while. I was working for our local community radio station doing event coordination when the city of Boulder in 1990 advertised for somebody to coordinate Bike Week and Earth Day activities. So I was like, ooh, me. And so I got hired for the job, and they told me they weren't doing Earth Day activities. I was coordinating Bike Week, which was Bike to Work Day. So we did Grand Glorious Bike to Work Day for 3 years, 4 years I did that. And then I started running Bicycle Colorado, which is a state bike advocacy group. And we took it from sort of a concept, you know, a few bits and pieces, into a pretty good organization. From there, I helped to found the Thunderhead Alliance, which is the Alliance for Biking and Walking, the national organization of state and local bike advocacy groups. As part of that, we got engaged in the federal legislation, you know, the big transportation funding bill that goes through Congress every 6 years or so, that decides how all the federal money goes back to the states. So I became the campaign manager for America Bikes. We created America Bikes, which was the bike community's effort to get good things for biking and walking into the federal transportation bill.
Wow.
So I worked as a lobbyist on K Street in Washington, D.C. for 2.5 years. We created the Safe Routes to School program, the federal Safe Routes to School program. We coined the term Complete Streets and launched it on the world, and had a lot of success in that version of the bill. And then I came back to Boulder in 2004 and ran the Go Boulder program, which is the city of Boulder's it's the city of Boulder's transportation planning policy program's arm. So biking, walking, transit, and more. I ran that for 7 years. And from there, I came to Bikes Belong, or now People for Bikes, to run the Green Lane Project.
Wow, that's quite a career you just rattled off there, Martha. Made a contribution all the way from the local to the national level in a number of ways.
You know, it's been really fun because I've been able to see it from a lot of different vantage points. And so now, like with Green Lane Project, I get to pull it all together. You know, a background in advocacy, a background working for a city, and really thinking about what are the pressure points, you know, what are the opportunities that we have right now to really make change? Because the way, from my vantage point, the two things that are really transformational right now are bike share systems and getting protected lanes on the ground are, you know, what the big things that really change a conversation in the city.
It's just that simple. Only two things.
In a
sense. Yeah. Right.
It's a good place to focus.
It is. Martha, your website here, would you care to name the URL?
It is greenlaneproject.org.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I'll have links in the show notes for my listeners to follow along with the conversation. Well, Martha, it is an honor to have you on the show today. Thanks so much for joining me this morning.
My pleasure.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks, Frank.
Well, we're back in the studio, and before we say goodbye, may I say thank you to CrowdSupply. CrowdSupply, it's the beginnings of a renaissance in product design and delivery. You have an idea for whether it's a new bicycle product or something maybe a little different, check them out, please, crowdsupply.com. Well, as we wind up here, would you come by the website, cdmcyclist.com, and leave a comment behind? I've got, like I said before, 53 other interviews for your listening pleasure there. Click on over. You could sit there, play them one after the other. I've got a PayPal donate button on the site, too, which really never gets enough exercise. Would you test it out for me, make sure it's still working? I'd appreciate that. Well, until next time, thanks so much for listening, and
Good day.